Now, here's Jack Patty.
Good morning. It's the 11th day of April. Welcome to the 9 to 10 show for this Forensic Friday on American DA Live. Brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has Triple Crown Elite grass seed, the seed everybody's talking about, available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags. 225-9433. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us as always, or almost always. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
I like the show this morning. I like our guest, and it's certainly timely. Tell us who's with us.
Well, Lexington Police Chief Ronnie Baston is our guest. And, you know, we've been, Ronnie and I have been talking, and you and I, all of us have been talking about issues, and we need to make sure Ronnie gets back here on a regular basis to kind of get us up to date, because it's timely. I think, because this NCAA celebration, they call it, and that sort of thing has been in the news, and there are I deal with a lot of police officers who are just tired because they had to stand out till 3 and 4 and 5 in the morning for dealing with, frankly, a bunch of drunk people.
Kids, I guess.
Well,
some of them.
So, Ronnie, Chief, welcome.
Good morning, Chief.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
I have to say that Ronnie's not being on the show is my fault. He's always been very, very agreeable to appearing. I just haven't gotten on and invited you, and I'm glad Ray invited you. I would love for you to be on periodically to just keep us up to date, you know,
as
to what's going on with the department. But I will never, if I live to be 100 years old, I will never understand how either celebrating a win or whatever they call it when you're defeated involves anything to do with burning couches and climbing trees and throwing beer cans and throwing beer bottles. And the funny thing is that whether you win or lose, it's going to be vandalism. That's the result, and I don't get it.
Well, I don't either, Jack, but unfortunately, it seems like that's the direction that some of our younger folks are headed in. And, some of the couches that we've seen burned over the last two celebrations we've had, 2012 and 2014, were much better than what I had when I was in college.
And also, there was a structure that burned down that aren't we pretty sure was set?
Well, we're looking into that. Certainly, we're looking from the arson perspective and our fire department arson investigators. That fire occurred about 2 hours after the crowd was disseminated, though, and we'd already cleared the area. We'd left some folks in the area just to kind of monitor for the rest of the evening.
Yeah.
But it was not directly associated with the celebration.
But there could have been. Fortunately, there wasn't, but there could have been someone in there, however it started. I understand that it was vacant, fortunately.
That's correct.
Yeah. Ray, go ahead.
Well, we got a number of topics we can talk about, but when did all of this begin? When did all of this kind of stuff begin?
Well, it started well before it came to Lexington, and it's my understanding that there's some thought that the couch burning part started in West Virginia with their football tradition there. They have a very very vibrant football tradition that's been in existence for quite some time, and that seems to be something that's caught on around other parts of the country. And we noticed it the football season before 2012. I had a couple games we had, and then in 2012, obviously for the Louisville game, the semifinal game, we had our hands full then with that.
So this is, and it is, it's sort of, State Street seems to be or Elizabeth Street or
University Avenue, that whole section over there, right?
Yeah, there's a couple of streets over there that seem to be the epicenter of most of the activity.
And Ground Zero was Euclid and Woodland over there where Linus is.
That's correct. In 96 and 98, that's where the crowd was, and we had the largest deployment. So in 2012, we knew that our resources had to be spread out more than it had been in the past. So we had folks at Woodland, Euclid, at Lyman, Maxwell because of a large crowd there, and then on State Street as well.
And I understood, Ray, that they, which I thought was a great idea, whoever deserves the credit for this ought to get it, that they had a garbage truck or something down at the end of the street at State Street, just ready for the thing to end so they could go clean the street up? Is that your understanding?
One of the things, one of the tactics that we use when it's time to go ahead and just try to end the rest of the party and move along the stragglers is to bring in the street sweeper. No one wants to stand around with that thing blowing water and
right.
With the vacuum going and dust flying, and it really puts like an ice cube on the party.
That's true then. You did have that down there. Oh, that's great. That's a great
idea.
You
know what? On the Bluegrass 10,000, I stand out on the corner at Good Shepherd Episcopal Church and watch, and I know when the street sweepers show up, the party's over.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
That's right.
Detective Johnny Williams told me, he said, probably we ought to send the street sweepers in about midnight, and because everybody says, well, that's the end of it.
Somebody called this program this week, because obviously we've been talking about that this week, and said, why don't they get one of those fire department units to go down the street and just spray the kids off the street.
Now, that may be the first bath some of them have had.
It might be. That's right. Now, the question is, though, are these UK students or are these rabble-rousers that come from somewhere else to cause trouble, or do we know?
Well, I can only tell you that in terms of arrests that we make for serious things that occur down there, that the majority of the folks are not students. And they do come.
The majority are not students.
Many do come from other towns for the celebration.
That's interesting.
Well, you said something, Ronnie, that at a certain point in the night, the whole dynamic seemed to change. Describe that to our listeners.
One of the things that we all seem to notice in all four games that were played is that the crowd was relatively tame for the first couple of hours, and then it started to become a little more rowdy. And as we watched that after the first game, we started seeing some folks that were coming, 2 o'clock in the morning or so, that started starting fights and more activity started to occur. So we're wondering if it maybe was some folks who are within the bar crowd that after the bars close, they come out, and maybe some of the individuals that we have issues with throughout the year at other times as well.
I assume that our police department has special riot type of training.
We do. This kind of an event, though, isn't what you'd use normal riot squad tactics in. It's we found that trying to move the crowd really can incite folks who aren't there to be rowdy sometimes and cause more activity.
We all remember the demonstrations of the 60s and hurling God only knows what at the police and the National Guard and that kind of thing. There wasn't anything actually being thrown at the police, was there, or was there?
No, we had some bottles in Rockstone.
Really?
During this course of events. Not nearly to the level that we did in 2012 after the Louisville game. But this time we did. I actually was hit with a bottle in the
You
side.
Were? Did your personnel have shields?
We didn't. We had them available. We didn't have to deploy those. There weren't that many that were being thrown. And, it's hard to identify because the crowd is so massive and you just can't see where they come from. We're going back and looking at videotape now. We had folks in the crowd taking videotape.
Oh, good.
And
still
shots.
Oh, you had your own people there.
We had our own people in the crowd. And
Chief, put those headphones on that are laying there somewhere, if you don't mind. We'll take a call here. Jim, good morning. You're on with the Chief and Ray Larson.
Yeah, what about sending the street sweepers in before it ends, like maybe 8 or 9 o'clock? Create a dust storm. Maybe I'd just scare them off. And also, do they put these couches out beforehand on the street, or they just bring them out and then catch them on fire?
Well, what we try to do is we work with some other partners, code enforcement and the fire department, and we go in and try to find those and look for the ones that may have been stockpiled for the events in advance, the day before and the day of, and we confiscate those that are out so that we try to reduce as much as we can that could be flammable. Sometimes they'll sneak one out of a house and get it out on the street, but I think what we've been doing has helped with that flammable. Sometimes they'll sneak one out of a house and get it out on the street. But I think what we've been doing has helped with that considerably. at least from what I saw for the last two games, were, you know, there weren't that many couch fires. There were other kinds of fires that were being set.
Thanks, Jim. We're going to take a break. 26 minutes after 9 o'clock, 9:26 on this Forensic Friday. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us in the studio, and our police chief, Ronnie Bastin, also with us this morning. And Keith has been on hold for a while. Keith, thanks for your patience. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, gentlemen. I just have a question for you guys, and I'll get off here and listen to your answer. Of all the costs that might be incurred by all of these celebrations, I wonder who's picking up the tab for all of this with all the equipment, personnel. Somebody's got to be picking up the tab somewhere, and I know it's got to be costing the city thousands of dollars to take care of all of this.
Keith, that's a great question. Yeah, you want to hang up and listen? I think that's what he said. Go ahead there, Chief. Were we paying for that, you and me and Ray and Keith?
We are paying for that.
Yeah.
I can't talk about the other agencies that assisted and helped with the event, but I can talk about the Division of Police. And we're pretty conservative, and we had saved enough money that we think. We don't have all the final numbers in yet from the weekend, but we think we're going to be able to absorb all the costs and not have to ask for any additional funding.
Because you planned ahead.
We planned ahead.
Yeah.
We reserve some money for that.
Here's an email from Mary Jane that says, I have a question for Chief Bastin relative to the incident this week at Wolf Creek Park. Can he please tell the neighbors of Wolf Run, including the lane, what exactly happened and what preventative measures will be taken to be sure the neighbors are safe?
Well, I can give you some of the details that I'm familiar with. I talked with both the commissioner of our general services, which is over parks and recreation, and I've spoken with our folks on patrol, and it appears that a disorder broke out on the basketball court in the park, carried over, spilled over into a parking lot of an adjacent property, and some shots were fired. So we know that's certainly concerning to folks who are over there engaged in other activities such as baseball and so forth in the park, and we're working very closely with our parks officials to try to add some additional patrols and make sure that folks can come and enjoy the park as they should be able to.
Ray, we're going to have to take a break here in about 2 minutes, so perhaps we can just set this thing up and come back. We want you folks to call if you have a question about anything relating to the police department, and if you have comments about the main reason we asked the chief here was to talk about the events of this past week. But you have been talking on this program for weeks and months.
Years.
Years, okay, about something called House Bill 463. And just give us a minute and a half description of what that is. You call it the catch and release bill. What is it?
House Bill 463 was enacted by our legislature, and their idea was that we are spending too much money incarcerating people in jails and prisons. As a result, they created this law that basically began to release prisoners from prison early and then discouraged sending convicted criminals to prison in the first place by placing them on probation. And in order to do that, they have put some limitations on the police. In the past, the police have arrested people for certain things, and now they ask the police to give them tickets. And that
it's like a speeding ticket.
Yeah, it's like a ticket. And they call it a citation, and it has impacted our ability to solve crimes and to get dangerous people off the street. And I think they've just transferred the cost of crime from the prison budget to the backs of the new victims of these people that are left on our streets.
We will get the reaction of Chief Bastin to that. Ray said on the program, or you said, I think you said off the air, I'm not going to talk about this relating to the police department until I talk to the chief first and make sure he's all right with that, and he is all right with that. So we'll discuss that and how it's impacted the police department when we come back here on News Talk 590 WVLT. Okay. We are back with Ray Larson and our police chief, Ronnie Bastin, and we're going to talk a little bit about House Bill 463. But before we do that, Chief, you said you got a text, I think, in the last break that the gentleman made a good point. Share that with our audience, if you will.
I did. I got a text from a friend of mine who's an ER doctor who asked if we could remind folks that the events such as the ones that we had this last weekend with the NCAA celebrations, if we'd remind them that they're not necessarily family-friendly events. And a lot of folks come down, a lot of teenagers and young teenagers want to come and be a part of it and see what's going on. But with some of the activities that do occur, it's more of an adult crowd. And I just like to remind families that probably shouldn't have their younger folks down there.
And there were some not serious injuries, but some injuries just the same.
There were some injuries. I know one young lady we carried out of the crowd, and the fire department did a great job with her, and they actually transported her, so she was losing quite a bit of blood, had been hit in the head with a bottle. So that's why I say it's just not a family-friendly event at all.
Here's an email, Here's an email that from Cindy. It's interesting, the ideas that people come up with. This is pretty interesting. It says, thinking outside the box, do you think either one of these ideas would help with crowd control on State Street? Number one, playing classical music through loudspeakers. I've heard that being effective for loitering outside businesses. And number two, setting up bright lights as they do at nighttime road construction sites.
Well, those can be effective with crowds, and there's some research now that says strobe lights can really have a dampening effect or whatever on folks. But the thing that we see as we look around the country at other celebrations and incidents where we have crowd issues is that sometimes when you try to move the crowd, you can agitate an otherwise relatively docile crowd, and you can have a moving situation then where you get a lot more destruction, a lot more people hurt.
And Cindy, by the way, at the end says, thanks for all you do and your officers for keeping us safe. Ray?
Thank you, Cindy.
Well, I forgot.
463.
Yeah. The other thing I want to say is that Ronnie mentioned to me off the air was the state police helped us out on this as well. How did that work, Ronnie?
It worked great. Rodney Brewer, the commissioner, is a very good friend of mine, and he and I talked throughout the events, and they had folks on standby for us if we needed them for the earlier games. And then when it got to the final game, I called him on Sunday afternoon, and he graciously supplied us with a number of troopers to come in and help. And the state police actually provided all the security for the Lyme and Maxwell area, which freed up a significant number of officers for us to get over on State Street for Monday night, where we really did need them.
Now, let's talk about 463, what I call the catch-and-release experiment with the safety of our citizens. Tell us how that law has affected the police ability to enforce the law.
Well, it has. It's had a direct effect on us. I mean, we can see it, and it's no big secret. I know the legislature had some goals, and they feel like those were successful. But in terms of how it directly affects the police and my folks that are out on the street every day, you know, now we have to issue citations for certain offenses that we used to be able to arrest for. And that may not seem like a lot on the surface, but when we can't arrest, then we don't get to do the search incident to the arrest that the law allows us to do. And we do generate a lot of charges, or used to be able to generate a lot of charges from that, because many times when we come into contact with someone for a relatively minor offense, the arrest for that allows us to uncover other things that are going on that are much more serious. And also the trip to jail. You'd be surprised how many people during that ride to jail want to tell us other things that lead to other cases being developed and significant charges. So we feel like it's had a pretty significant effect.
Well, and that's discouraging. It's really just, if you talk to police, they sometimes have kind of throw their hands up in the air a little bit. The guys that come in that we talk to about in preparation for trials and that sort of thing. Now, I'll tell you something else that's happening that frightens me. In Louisville, a week or two ago, they had on their waterfront park, I think is what they call it down there. It's really a nice place. They had basically some mob violence going on, mostly teenagers that were just heading around. They assaulted people. They robbed people. And next thing you know, they've spread out into the various parts of downtown and they're robbing. Oh, I think they had 22 incidents of robberies and assaults and that sort of thing. And I just read last night that there is the problem is, according to an FBI report, there is young violent gangs being developed in middle school, for crying out loud. 14, 15 years old, and armed and violent and that sort of thing. And they've even apparently threatened to, they're getting intelligence, they're threatening to have some impact on that Pegasus parade down there. Have you heard the same thing I'm hearing, Ronnie?
I saw some news reports of what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, it's scary, and this is at the same time now, Jack, that our legislature is weakening the juvenile laws that we already have, and that's a little bit scary. So, you know, sooner or later, I think we're going to have to retrench and start to protect the folks who obey the law and pay the taxes. And right now, I think we're more worried about prison budgets.
Chief, could you tell us the kind of things that you used to be able to arrest people for that you now are the only thing you can do is issue a citation? Be specific about that.
Very generally, most misdemeanor offenses. And some traffic offenses that we could arrest for, we give citations for now. So, and that's the majority of what we come in contact with, is the more minor offenses. So it has affected our ability, I think, to be effective in the community. And a lot of times when we're dealing with more serious issues, significant drug sales or violence within a community, one of the ways that we gather intelligence is by making cases and arresting people for more minor offenses and mm-hmm. trying to get information. So if we don't have the opportunity to arrest, we don't get that contact or the usefulness of the contact.
Well, it's kind of hit the fan in the last couple of weeks because there was a case right here in Lexington that the state police made. They stopped somebody for driving on a suspended driver's license. And they arrested him. And as it turns out, they subsequently found, I guess, drugs, and subsequently found out later that he had two outstanding arrest warrants for him. And the Court of Appeals came down and said 463 says, no, you should have given him a ticket. They suppressed the drugs that they found, and that was it. And so that case was reversed. And so what's the message to the police? The police now say, well, whenever we get something like a operating on a suspended license, we can't go any further than that. Here's the dilemma. So what happens, Jack, if we stop you and you're on a suspended license and we give you a ticket, what does the police officer do? Does the police officer give you the ticket and let you drive off again? Well, you know, because
you're breaking the law, well, and then it'll allow you to continue to break the law.
Well, yeah. We're not going to allow the person to drive.
You're not.
You know, they're on
okay.
suspended. We're gonna require them, if they're by themselves, to, you know, get someone else to come get them or find another way home.
Okay.
We're not
going
to take the car no
more. All right, we're taking our last break here. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. 10 minutes away from 10 o'clock, News Talk 590 WVLK. Chief Bastin is with us along with Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. David, good morning. David, are you there? Maybe I didn't get David. Oh, there we go. David, good morning.
Good morning, Jack. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just, you know, somewhat of an observation, but it seems as though we have a lot of people in jail, or they were putting in jail for things like pot and, you know, just other very, and I guess that would be the one that I would bring up as the best example. People don't need to be going to jail for pot, but, you know, the other thing, I have employees that often end up going to jail for non-payment of their child support, and it just seems like we've got to find a way of then jailing these people. You know, they have a fine, so they jail them, and then through that jail process, they forgive the fine. It just seems like it's a double whammy for the taxpayer. But, you know, I think that if we just put the violent people in jail, in prison, in more of a prison, you know, jails for the, I guess, the less severe offenders, but we just don't seem to be using the system like we once did. Let's make prisons a very tough place and something that you don't, you know, go take a vacation in and regroup and learn some new tactics on how to, you know, do a better criminal operation. But whoever these advocates for these lessening of our of these sentences and the severity for the real harshest of our violators, it just seems like that's what's gotten the whole system out of whack. We're not taking the mean, terrible ones and, you know, putting them in a very punitive setting. It's sort of just like a timeout.
Right.
Well, let me deal with the first thing David said, and that is it seems like we're putting the people with marijuana in jail, and we're and non-payment of child support, that sort of thing. It, David, 65% of the people that go through Fayette Circuit Court are what you call probated, put right back on the streets. First offense, drug possessors or users never go to prison. They just don't. I mean, it's just something that doesn't happen. And people that don't pay child support, you ought to hear the other side. Now, the people who are owed the child support are some of the most upset people there are in the world, because these people get charged with non-payment or flagrant non-support, which is a felony, and they get probated, and those folks say, what's the deal? This guy had a kid, and he's not having to support him. You know who's supporting him, those kids, David? You are. Taxpayers are paying for it, and this guy, this people that don't pay their child support are walking away. I mean, what are you going to do?
Well,
it's called responsibility,
you know,
is what it is.
These, hey, let's make some kind of a work program where we can put these people to work. I don't care if it's assembling things. It just seems like the whole system is so out of whack. And, you know, I know that, oh, by golly, you can't either make a prisoner, you know, feel uncomfortable or put him to work. I mean, the whole system's crazy. And, Ray, I love what you do. I mean, you're the man down there, and I think that they've just got you chasing so many, you know, red herrings that keeps you off of, you know, keeping the violent people put away. And you know, I'm 100% behind you. I'm a very conservative person, but I think you do the best you can with, you know, the stupidity that seems to come out of Frankfort. But hang in there, Ray, and appreciate everything.
I always liked David.
I know you did. George, good morning.
Good morning. I want to thank both Jack and Ray Larson for doing the show on the Barnes family murders, because it cleared up a lot of stuff I'd heard through the years. And now I understand why my mother was so fearful when she saw that in the news. It made a whole lot of things a lot more clear growing up. Second, I would ask the police chief, myself as a cab driver, and we as normal citizens, and do to really support our police department and help make their job easier.
He said, what can the average citizen do to help support the police and make their job easier?
Well, citizens do support us every day. We couldn't be effective without that support. But, you know, what we encourage people to do is become as knowledgeable as you can by attending maybe our Citizens Police Academy and learning more about the department and what we have to do in order to build cases and be effective in working with people to help increase the quality of life in Lexington.
I'll tell you something that people need to do is be involved. Pay attention to what's going on, and when you see something that you don't think is right, let us know.
Yeah.
And don't sit around and think somebody else is going to do it. We have to take the initiative and become involved.
That's a very good point, Ray. That's what we encourage when we're working with neighborhoods that are experiencing problems is, you know, the neighborhood and the residents of the neighborhood really have to set the standards of and expectations for the community. Then they have to reach out to whoever is partners to help maintain those standards.
Thank you, Chief, for being with us. Thank you, Ray. Stand by. We have an update from ABC. If you're listening to WVLK AM, stay with us for Live with Lee. If